As we go through this conversation about the different levels of maturity in prayer, we're going to cover some of the same points for each of the subjects. We'll talk about what we understand that level looks like. We'll talk about the perception of God and how we might see Him at that point. We'll talk about what the possible pitfalls or traps of this level of maturity might be. And then where we can, we'll be bringing in some relevant scriptural comments as well. Having spoken about the basic information here, we'd like to make the transition now to discuss the actual application. Information doesn't help much if we don't apply it in our lives. So we want to take the five levels of maturity that reflect emotional and behavioral and spiritual maturity and now apply it directly to what it might look like as we're evaluating where we are in our own prayer life and our own faith life. Spiritual disciplines and the way we grow in our faith are very strongly connected. And as a community, we found that that makes a difference both individually and corporately. So what we've done is take the levels of maturity and try to connect them with what we think it looks like at various stages of having become a believer. We see the new believer as being at the infant stage, although of course it is not age-related at all. We see level two as being a person who is becoming more serious about their faith. Level three is when they become aware of becoming a servant of Yahweh Elohim, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Four is not a lot different from the servant stage, but moving into a bond servant, which is sort of a long-term decision that this is the God that I serve, and I don't want to ever serve anyone else. And the final stage that we see connected to being an elder in maturity is learning how to pray as part of the betrothed wife and the bride of Messiah who is to come.
And I think it's really important, Barb, that we do qualify here that these stages of maturity in prayer life are not to be going out and judging other people,
yes,
where
exactly,
other people yeah. are in their maturity in prayer life, but as just as in the life model maturity indicators to evaluate where we are in our maturity, also to do a self-evaluation mm-hmm. of where we are in the maturity of the prayer.
Yes. We don't want this ever to be used as a judgmental kind of process that in which somebody would be put down, but we do want it to be a guidance, a yardstick, a way of measuring how am I doing and growing into becoming more like Messiah, because
yes.
that's what our calling is, to grow up in every way into Messiah who is our head.
Yes. Sometimes that gets difficult when...
Sometimes.
when as a community, we are challenging each other as to, you know, level of maturity or, you know, where we're at spiritually and holding each other accountable with it, you know, and that's hard to not feel like, well, I'm being judged. Oh, so like you're so much more mature than I am. So, you know, but that's mm-hmm. not the focus.
And what know? Maturity level would that be if we come with that feeling?
I refuse to be put on the spot.
Yeah. And so when we feel those tendencies in ourselves, we're worried about being judged. You know, one of the things that I think has been
fear
happening.
Bond.
Yeah. We recognize it as a fear bond and we all kind of go, oh, well, what's happening with that? We need to address mm-hmm. that situation a little bit more and then come back around, because the bottom line is we do choose to continue to be in relationship with one another.
Yes.
And we do choose to move forward toward becoming more set apart and mm-hmm. becoming mature in our Messiah, as we're called to do.
Mm-hmm. Iron sharpens iron.
Yes.
There it is. Yeah. So let's take a look at that new believer stage. Oh my, when we first started talking about this, I think there were all six people talking at once.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have
yeah.
to try not to talk all at once. What is it like? What do we remember when we were a brand new believer and what our prayer looked like and sounded like and how we felt?
I don't want this to come across incorrectly, so please take this with a grain of salt, but it's almost like a child in a candy shop, and there's just everything there, and you just want to reach out and grab everything. There's that excitement, the joy, the eagerness, the zealousness, the freshness. It really is looking at things through rose-colored glasses in a way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Would you say most people experience this as they've grown up in the church and they've grown up in their belief, or when they have some kind of a new awakening? I don't want to automatically say the born anew experience, but how would you say that? Some kind of a description of a new believer?
I refer to it as the epiphany moment in my life. It isn't that I didn't know or I didn't receive or accept necessarily, but there was just this huge epiphany, and it was all of a sudden it became very clear that this is where my focus needed to be. But I know it was an epiphany moment. How do I talk about that?
No, that was very good. I liked it. Mm.
The epiphany moment was that I am saved, and I think that was a big thing. It was a hallelujah, I am saved. And I, even though I'd heard the words, I don't know that I recognized what that fully meant. So there was that coming into it, that new excitement, and I'm saved. And it was very exciting, very exciting. I think there was a lot of focus on what it is that, what do I get out of this? It wasn't about what I could do for others or what I could do for God. It was, oh boy, now I can pray, and I asked for myself. So it was a lot of self-focus.
Yeah.
The prayers were praying for myself and help me, very much help me to do this. Very self-centered at that point in time.
I'm going to do this, so make it happen. You know, I want to do this.
Please bless me.
Yeah. Bless me.
In some faith traditions, there's the understanding that we make a decision for Christ. I think that's the terminology a lot of people would be familiar with. It's the day they prayed the sinner's prayer and said, you know, I acknowledge I'm a sinner and I need you to come into my life. Is that what we're referring to at this point? Automatically? Yes? No?
I don't know that it is always that way. I know for myself, I prayed the sinner's prayer long before I got that huge epiphany thing. I thought I had the answers, and I'm not sure if that's just a sub-level of the new believer, or if it just took me that long to get through the new believer stage. Yeah. I don't know.
Some of us move quickly, and some of us move slowly.
Some take a little longer to get through.
Generally, that's probably, generally, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can see how this new believer stage fits so well into the maturity level of the infant stage, because it's not a judgmental thing again, you know, like, well, yeah, you're just being selfish. That's the growth level of the infant.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
The infant is receiving. And developing and growing in their character is, you know, and that's what we're doing as new believers, developing in our character, in our spiritual growth.
Yes. So this is not a criticism.
No.
Because the primary task of that infant stage is to learn how to receive.
Exactly.
And especially some people who come from perhaps an abusive background or some trauma-based background, to learn how to receive is extremely difficult.
I also think of little children when they're praying, as we're thinking about this new believer stage. My granddaughter will go, thank you, Jesus, for Mommy and Daddy, for Nana and Papa, for Mickey, and et cetera, et cetera. So I think in some ways they are beginning to look out beyond themselves a little bit, but I think they also are repeating a lot of what they hear, and it's the very simplistic, but from a pure heart.
Yes.
When we talk about that beginning faith of stage, the new believer, we also need to remember that just as in the first stage of maturity, the infant stage, as the person begins to organize themselves as a person in relationships, we are also, in a sense, learning how to organize ourselves in relationship to God, too, and in our whatever our church organization or our
religious. Yeah, with other believers.
Exactly, yeah. So we do that defining, too, in that stage.
As a new believer, we've kind of observed in our own experience and people we've talked with and been around that there is still a time period where you're kind of under the lies of the enemy. a spiritual warfare perspective, and a lot of new believers don't understand very much about that. But as we're looking back, we can see that that a person has a lot of expectations, but they really may not know very much about God's character as yet. And so they may tend to have a lot of emotional highs and lows, and they're looking toward that emotional high or the manifestation of something that convinces them that God is with them.
One of the big lies of the enemy is that, okay, now God will give you whatever you want.
Yes.
You know, the old, you know, give me the desires of my heart. That verse doesn't mean he'll give you anything you want. It talks about, you know, giving you the desires. God will give us the desires that he wants in our hearts, you know. And but the enemy turns that around and makes it sound like he'll give you anything you want.
Yes.
And which is heading you into a major crash when things don't happen.
When that doesn't happen, then all of a sudden the rose-colored glasses come off, and what am I doing wrong? Or is God not there? That type of thing.
Right.
We'd observe that there's sort of a 1 minute experiencing the high of God's blessings, but then quickly falling into the trap of the low when the answer doesn't come, when or how or why or where we expect it. Along with that, how do we see God when somebody's in this stage of a new believer? Do we have some thoughts about that?
I think a lot of that is partially based on your own personal life experiences. I think at first you may perceive God as the Father or a son, or maybe as a brother or a friend. But the danger in that, or one of the pitfalls of that, is that if you don't have a positive relationship, or you haven't had a positive relationship in your life with your father or a brother or maybe your son, you may not have a very good idea of who God is. You hear the words and you may associate who that is in your mind, but it may not be who God really is. You have a slanted view or a slanted understanding of who he might be.
Yeah, and I think, too, along with family, also the congregation or church where you may belong, there's different thoughts on who God is. He might be an all-loving God who gives, or he could be a judgmental, wrathful God.
Exactly.
So there's going to be that difference, too, along with the family history.
Yeah, this is true.
For me, I remember being able to understand who he was more clearly first as brother, and then I think moving then into king was the thing for me before the understanding of who he is as a father came clear. And so I've asked that of other people, too. You know, how did you come to know him first? And it is a reflection of life experience in some ways, but it also seems to me to be a progression as we're growing and understanding how very small we are and how very incredibly omnipotent he is.
Yeah, I think growing up, he was someone who was far off.
Yes.
I would say my little prayers that I was taught in Bible school and Sunday school, but when I really came to understand that Jesus died on the cross for my sin, that personal relationship began. And that was like, then I saw him so differently that I can't even say, he's my Savior. He gave his life for me.
I think for me, I felt like, oh, he's my best friend, you know, better than any best friend I've ever had, because he understands me better than anybody ever could. And, you know, to a point, I still feel that way, obviously, I think. And,
yes, I think it's none of these stages, I think, completely go away.
Right.
We always carry with us from stage to stage what we learned.
Right.
But then it's, I think the difficulty or the trap there is the possibility of staying with that buddy-buddy kind of feeling, because there is so much more to the relationship as you grow than just buddy-buddy. You know, you're my buddy.
Yes.
You're always gonna, you know, always gonna take my side. You know, it's not even necessarily take my side, because he's always on our side. But we may not understand what that means exactly.
The discipline, you mean?
Yeah, that's it.
The pruning.
Oh no, that doesn't come till the next stage.
The self-believer, or I mean, the new believer stage is where, the rose-colored glasses, I think.
Yeah, well, it's really a wooing that's going on.
Yeah,
you know, God is really wooing us into that relationship, and there are going to be, it's not going to be the pruning or the discipline as much.
It's going to be disappointments, though.
Well, there'll be disappointments, but it's just that freshness, you know, that's there. The wooing that's going on, it really is a wooing stage, I think.
And that's the danger, because I've seen where people, they're so excited, they go up front, they get baptized, and the least little thing comes along, and next thing, they've disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Because and that just goes right in with the parable of the sower,
yes,
doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
We talked about a pitfall as being an expectation of blessing, blessing, blessing. You know, people mm-hmm. say God's the blessing machine, mm-hmm. but they have not yet come to understand that there is obedience on our part. Not that it's a prerequisite to being saved, but that if you love me, then you obey my commands. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about it, that sometimes people fall into an inappropriate reliance on grace. And I remember being shown a few years ago that grace is for when we fall short of his standard, not for when we aim short.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's a good way of thinking of it, yes.
Yeah. We might have a lot of head knowledge, but we don't necessarily have the heart knowledge. How can you? If you've just come into a relationship as an infant coming into the world, you're the clean slate. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of start new and learn how mm-hmm. things would be.
And that's really, I think, where God himself takes over, and he's the one probably pursuing the relationship more fervently than the new believer at that stage. It's that covenant relationship where, you know, God is the superior being, and he's reaching down to us, the human, and we are at an inferior level when we are compared to the creator of the universe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But he is coming down through Messiah to be reaching us, and is really pursuing us and wooing us at that point, and is taking us where we are.
Mm-hmm. So he is rejoicing over us with singing, just like we are not upset when an infant, you know, begins to learn to talk and they can't say our name exactly right. You know, we don't get all upset about that. We just encourage them with where they are and what they're
right.
doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 1 Corinthians 13:11. When I was a child, I spoke as a child, I thought as a child, I reasoned as a child. That's mm-hmm. normal. It's a normal part of development.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, and when we are learning to walk and we stumble and fall and get tears in our eyes, he's there with comfort, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.